just started. They'll roll.
Good morning. So I'd like to call to order the Board of Directors special meeting. This is a budget hearing for the Air District. I have no opening comments. So Marcy, could you please do roll call?
On the roll for the Board of Directors special budget hearing of May 15th, 2019, Director Abe-Koga, Director Barrett.
Here.
Director Canepa.
Here.
Director Cutter. Here. Director Joya.
Here.
Director Groom.
Present.
Director Haggerty. Director Hudson.
Here.
Director Ju. Director Kim. Director Nis.
Here.
Director Marr. Director Miley. Director Mitchoff. Director Ross.
Here.
Director Sparing. Director Wagon Connect. Director Wilson. Director Zane. Secretary Chavez. Vice Chair Sinks. Chair Rice,
here.
We have a quorum.
Here we go. So do you want me to open the public hearing? You can start with some
certainly
introductory remarks.
Yes. Good morning, Madam Chair, members of the board. This is the first of two hearings on our budget for next fiscal year. I'm going to have Jeff McKay walk you through a presentation of the proposed budget. And the second hearing will be on June 5th. Let's hand it over to Jeff.
Thank you, Jack. Thank you, Chair Rice, members of the board. This is the first, as Jack mentioned, this is the first of two presentations, public hearings, before the full board on the fiscal year ending 2020 budget. I've got hot water, thank you. I should not have buttoned my. There is no requested action today, and as Jack mentioned, the second hearing will be in June. Excuse me. Budget and Finance Committee has already held two meetings to review this budget, has forwarded on to the full board, and the full board's also heard the first of two public hearings regarding the fees. So I'm first going to talk about the status of the current fiscal year, which is on target, nothing unusual to report there. I'm then going to move to our financial history. And this is important for context. We do tend to update and revisit some of the same slides every year on this. So apologies to those of you to whom these are looking very familiar, but the context, I think, is important. Then we'll jump into the proposed budget for fiscal year 2020 and talk about next steps. So in the current fiscal year, the year that we're in, we have a general fund budget of $99 million. I'm sorry, I have to step.
That's fine. Is Director Groom, is she over there? Director Groom, do you want to fill in some of this 30 seconds with any comments as the chair of the budget?
I'm having the same trouble as Mr. McKay this morning. We had a pretty thorough redo of the budget. We think that the emphasis is in the right places, and the reserves are healthy, and revenue is on target.
Thank you. I apologize. I usually sing a couple arias before I step up here, and I neglected to do that today. So in the current fiscal year, we've got a $99 million budget. That includes use of $4 million from reserves for the TIO loan program. And as of right now, we're on target for all of our budgeted items. And it is important to review what we did when times turned bad a while back. We did use our reserves in a controlled manner. We stopped filling vacancies. We put off expenditures. We initiated a cost recovery policy, which has been reviewed in detail during the FEED discussions. And very importantly, we continued funding our retirement liabilities right through the downturn. This manner in which we dealt with the downturn, it's been suggested we should revisit what that would look like if we had another one. And so we'll be doing that in the mid-year when we come back again to our financial plan, which was presented for the first time to the board in mid-year of this year. So our reserves have recovered substantially. These are audited numbers, so they go out through 2018. We have, since this time, used some of those reserves. So our current reserves are at $30 million, as I will describe in detail when I get into the current, into the proposed budget. As indicated, we used some money for the TIO. We used some money, fortunately, to purchase Richmond, as we're expanding quickly. And it's a good thing we have that available. And we've also acquired more of the eighth floor in this building. Our general fund expenditures have trended up recently due to a variety of factors, especially, for instance, AB 617 and other challenges that we have before us. And concurrent with that, of course, we're also staffing up, and this shows our actual filled positions over a period of years up to 2018. We review our funding status for our medical benefits every 2 years. We have another set of numbers coming out this year, audited numbers, in which, as expected, you'll see that funded status continue to increase. And if we continue at the current pace, we do hope to reach our target for funding of our medical retirement in just a couple of years. CalPERS pension, we see this unfortunate event where we had 2 years of losses, a 5% and 24% loss, which somehow translate into a 45% drop in funding status. And well, fortunately for 2018, we did get a rate of return of 8.6%, but of course we don't know what the future holds in this regard. So let me turn now to the proposed budget. And it does include some steps to address both OPEB, continue to address both OPEB liabilities and our retirement liabilities. It's a $105 million budget. Use $4 million from reserves towards building out the building in Richmond. We continue the assumption of the cost recovery policy, which is really addressed during the fee presentations. The staffing level we're bringing forward is 405, the same as in the year that we're in right now. As I mentioned, we do address retirement liabilities, and we've included 3.5% cost of living in the budget. Breakdown of our revenue, a third property tax, almost half permit fees, and 5%, that's the transfer from reserves, 8% from grants, 6% is other revenues, things such as interest and penalties and settlements. Our expenditures are about two-thirds related to our employees and employee costs, and 26% service supply, 9% capital. I don't intend to go through every individual item in the capital budget, but these two pages I'll show are illustrative of the fact that a lot of our capital costs these days have to do with what we're trying to do out in the communities to provide more of what is desired out there relative to our technical group's ability to monitor and analyze what's in the air. In addition, you can see a couple large items there, $4 million for facility improvements out in Richmond. I want to point out, please, that when this budget is approved, that does not approve the expenditure of that $4 million. This is just putting it in the budget, and further authorization has to come forward to the board to actually expend. And the $2.6 million there is for our permitting compliance system, software systems. Cost recovery has been dealt with in some detail in the presentation to the full board on our proposed fee increases, and I won't go into this in great detail. I'll talk about it a little bit here. We're allowed to recover 100% of our costs for our fees. It was a kind of a rough road before we had a policy in place. Since then, we've been on a steady path towards an 85% minimum target. We are up to 84%, but because we've got so many vacancies, as we fill those vacancies, we will see that cost recovery rate drop back down again. And this just reiterates what I just said. The new and enhanced programs are driving hiring and other costs, and so we will see a cost recovery drop as we move forward. I'd like to talk now a little bit about our reserves. We have a reserves policy in place of 20% of our budget, so that's a $20 million minimum for this current budget. Our projected reserves for the end of the proposed fiscal year is $26 million. That's because we have 30 in the bank right now, and we're requesting to use 4 out of reserves for Richmond. And to show this in more detail then, we have a $20 million line there for economic contingency, 20% of the budget, and then an additional $6 million in various designations for a total of 26. And then at the bottom, there's that 4 that we are requesting to use from reserves. So that's the policy on our reserves. We also have policies on our retirement liabilities. We have recently reviewed and revised those policies. It's not my goal to bring those forward today, although of course anything can be discussed and any direction can be given. I'll talk about the policies that are in place, and then during the discussion mid-year on our financial plan, I'll be talking not just about those policies, but a more complicated topic, which is our asset allocation of those investments. There are a variety of options that are coming forward and evolving relative to 115 type trusts, and we'll be diving into those in some detail with the mid-year discussion and the fiscal policy discussion. So for medical, for OPEB, we've got a $58 million obligation, $40 million in the bank, but again, that's as of the 2017 audit. That will be more with the 2019 audit. That would leave unfunded $18 million, 32%. The board has put in place a funding policy that says we have a 90% minimum funding level target. Right now, if we continue, as we have for several years, putting $4 million into the bank on this, we're going to reach that level conservatively in 3 years. And of course, that's a happy story considering that back around 2008 or so, we had zero for this. It seemed like a very long path, but one foot in front of the other, year over year. CalPERS obligation, according to CalPERS audit assumptions on earnings, $283 million, $207 million in the bank, 73% funded, again, probably optimistic. We have a funding policy here of trying to reach a 90% funded level. At first, that policy did not have a target date. The board recently added to that policy a target date of 20 years out, and with very our best job with a crystal ball, if we do an additional $1 million annual additional contribution, then in 20 years, we should be at that 90% funded level. Again, a discussion of how those assets are allocated is important, and is something we'll be bringing forward at the mid-year discussion with the financial plan. So in summary, we have a balanced budget. The budget does use $4 million in reserves. The number of positions in the budget remains at 405. This budget does assume the amended fee schedules was brought forward to the board in the first fee presentation recently. We've got an additional $1 million annual contribution into our pension. We've got an additional $4 million annual contribution for OPEB in line with the board's policies on those two topics. So previous actions have been taken. The Budget Finance Committee has received this presentation twice, and this is the first public hearing on the budget. In addition, the full board has heard one presentation on the fee regulations. So the future actions would be on June 5th, a public hearing, second public hearing for both this budget and for the fee proposals, and that would all become effective on July 1st. There are no requested actions today, and I'll be happy to take any questions.
Thank you, Jeff. Questions? Yes, Director Cutter.
Thank you for this report, and I apologize for not getting these questions to you earlier. I always try to get number questions because they're so sensitive. I was just looking through some of the budget. One item struck me is we have consultants. It's on page 37 for the advisory council. So the reason it went up, even though our the FTEs didn't go up, it's for the consultant service. That's correct.
I'm sorry. You said for the advisory council?
It's on page 37 of the
page
budget.
37. We're hoping to hold a PM summit this year. Next fiscal year, and we're hoping that the advisory council will be the conveners for that summit, and so we've included some budgeted dollars for that event.
Okay, and I noticed that most of them are, you know, for professional services and contracts and so forth, but I wondered with the, because our FTEs didn't go up, how come we're putting so much into the, employee costs, or if these consultants are going to be from outside or inside or...
So our employee costs are exactly the salaries plus the overhead for each employee for each seat that we expect to have filled during the fiscal year. We are continuing to hire to try to get to the 405 that was approved for the current fiscal year. And so the current budget anticipates fewer vacancies for 2020. The proposed budget includes fewer anticipated vacancies for 2020 than we had for 2019.
Okay. Maybe I can talk with you offline because I'm sure that these are my questions that I just need to get straight in my head. Nothing to bore the public with. The second question I had is talking about, it's on page 39, the FTE going up. Just what I'm trying to figure out, so what FTE this would be. Would it be a, you know, starting staff, middle staff, one of the upper staff, to see, you know, just the cost of the FTE, one FTE is going up, and, you know, almost $200,000. And so it would just be helpful when we're doing this, and I'm sure this is probably all discussed in the Budget Committee, so I'm sorry for that, but it would be nice if you would put the title of the person you're hoping to get, and then that kind of would justify what the costs were and so far.
I understand.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah, And Jeff, just to maybe, so I know in my county, oftentimes we have sort of an average cost fully loaded for any personnel, also to sort of gauge by their obviously variations, but that's sometimes a good marker as well. Director Ness.
So just to talk about, and thank you for the report, it's good. Just to talk about reserves for a minute, because our reserves are extremely healthy. And we are really over what the policy is. So talk about that for a little. There are some cities and counties that would worry about that, believe it or not.
Certainly. So we have a board-mandated minimum of 20% of the budget. So what that means is, to the extent that we think of reserves as available to use for, usually reserves, of course, are for one-time expenses as opposed to ongoing expenses. We really are only targeting the amount that's above that $20 million. So in other words, that would put only $6 million in reserves actually available for use at the end of the 2020 fiscal year. Let's see. Find that chart. So during difficult times, for instance, in 2007, you can see that we actually had $29 million as opposed to $6 million more than our minimum reserve policy. Of course, the reserve policy at that time, by the way, was 15% of our general fund budget, not 20. And that was a very healthy reserve, but we drew it down pretty rapidly. We told the board we felt we could draw it down only to the minimum and not below, and succeeded in doing that. You can see that in 2011, the reserves dropped down and just touched the policy minimum, and then the economy improved, and we were able to improve on that position.
Although 2009 and 2011 were terrible years.
They were terrible years.
They really were. I remember we struggled through those. And you did say CalPERS came in at 8+%
For 18, that's correct.
Yeah, well, let's hope they duplicate it this year.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay, thanks very much.
You're welcome.
If I can, Madam Chair, Director Ness, just to add to Mr. McKay's remarks, there are some things that we have coming up that we're not necessarily covering here, only because we're still working through some of these issues. One thing that's going to eat away at our reserves, though, likely, is the fact that we're going to continue to fill vacancies. That's largely why I think we can continue to see money being poured back into our reserves, is because we do have a fairly healthy vacancy rate right now. And we're aggressively trying to fill those positions to meet some of our obligations like 617 and, frankly, just getting more boots on the ground for enforcement and engineering and things like that. So while that's the picture today, we pretty much anticipate internally that you're going to start to see lesser and lesser reserves here pretty soon. And, of course, when we look at the economic horizon, that causes us some pause, right, as it does every public agency. Everyone says, you know, when is that next recession occurring? But nevertheless, we do think, you know, we have an obligation, right, to have a healthy enforcement staff, healthy permitting staff, and then implement some of these measures that have been brought to us, like 617. So,
mm-hmm. Director Hudson.
Yeah, quickly, when does 617 funding end? That was just 2 years? Or?
Well, we're laughing a little bit, only because you hear us talking right now, because the May revise just came out, and it just took a huge chunk of money out of the 617 budget. So we're scrambling to try to figure out the answer to your question.
I'm not asking you anymore.
But we did get the implementation money, is my understanding. As in the May revise, we do see our monies to implement the program. It's really getting something done on the ground, which is what we're a bit concerned about, the incentive monies, Director Hudson. So we'll come back to you with an answer to your question, I think. We just need a little bit of time.
Director Bowders.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just wanted to take a moment to commend Jeff and Stephanie for their excellent work on this, and thank Director Groom for her leadership as the chair of the Budget and Finance Committee, serving on numerous budget and finance committees for numerous agencies. This is one of the best budgets I've ever had to review, so I appreciate your work.
I have a couple questions, Jeff. So first of all, this goes back to the projections on as we fill those vacancies, you're projecting a cost recovery drop. I'm just and I'm wondering if you don't, and also a drawdown of the reserves, if you can't talk, be more, a little bit more specific. I mean, we must have sort of an eyeball on how many positions we're filling and what that's going to do to our cost recovery.
Certainly, in round numbers, you could say that we would hope to add 10% to the filled seats, and perhaps not all of that 10% would actually be against items that are cost recoverable. So a full 10% drop in that 85% cost recovery would bring us down to 75%, but perhaps it will not be the entire 10% that is against that. So we'll be probably down somewhere just a bit below 80 eventually.
And is that inclusive of our intentions around fee increases?
Yes, that is correct.
Right, and then my other question is on slides 11 and 12. On slide 12, so that breakdown of expenditures, is that fairly typical in terms of the categories? Or is it
yes.
from year to year? Is there anything that is really different in this?
Chair Rice, that has changed very little over the years in terms of the ratio that you're referencing. Yes.
That was, and I had the same question for the revenue breakdown. Is that fairly typical also?
Also has changed very little. Our property taxes for a while were gaining on permit fees as a ratio. But with the new challenges we're being given, the permit fees are holding their own at this point.
Okay. And then lastly, so you brought up the May revise that just came out as though I think we were anticipating there might be some changes. There was unknowns there for sure. Are there any other things on your sort of on your radar, whether it's new regulation or a drop or further revisions to the governor's budget or what have you, that you have concerns about with regards to impact on next year's budget?
Well, I'll just start, and I'll look to Mr. McKay to add to my remarks. What you're not seeing here as part of this budget is a staff recommending to you to increase staff. We are trying to basically get done that which is on our plate and to move forward in a manner because largely some things still need to get figured out. And let me explain a little bit. On 617, for example, we need to be able to work with the state and the community further in defining just what we're going to get done in West Oakland, because that plan is out. And then in Richmond is really, we're in the midst of putting together, of course, the monitoring work, but that's going to result in a whole set of actions, we believe, in Richmond as well. And then, so we have elected not to come to you at this point and say, we need another 20 staff on top of the 405, for example. That being said, I don't want the board to be surprised, though, at about mid-year time frame, we may need to ask for a mid-year augmentation. And so it isn't necessarily the budget, Madam Chair, to answer your question directly. It's rather our work with the state, California Resources Board specifically, and then the local communities that will likely drive some of our changes to you, to this budget.
Yeah, I think I was pointing to those things that we don't necessarily have complete control over. Yeah. Jeff, did you want to add to that, and then Director Hudson?
Just to add briefly, yes, we, for instance, we're cautious, and so we're not even claiming that we know exactly how much AB 617 money we'll get until we actually get the check. We've been told how much we'll get. And to answer a previous question, Director Rice, our fully burdened average is about $170,000 per employee.
Director Hudson.
Yeah. My recollection is part of the strategy is we know there are people that are going to be leaving, retiring, et cetera. This is an opportunity to bring people in early, have some funding for it, and be prepared when should the next downturn happen. Is that correct, or am I dreaming about this?
That's correct, Director Hudson. That's how we are seeing it as well, trying to be cautious. And so we do have a hard time, frankly, making progress towards filling all of our vacancies. We're getting staff coming to us these days quite a bit and indicating that they are planning to retire either currently or maybe twice by the end of the year. You know, it's a sad thing in the sense that we're losing part of our family, but at the same time, these are all personal decisions, and it's frankly a function of the fact that I think the average age of our employees is low 50s, I believe, right now. So a lot of them low 50s, maybe mid 50s, and so there a lot of them are eligible to retire, and so that's has its own challenges, frankly, with us trying to hire staff. And Director Cutter, I think a question you had before, we largely seek to try to hire at the journeyman level to come in at the lower, you know, the younger staff coming in at what we call air quality specialists. It's kind of a journeyman level position. At the, and that's with the case, I think, of most divisions at the district.
Director Sparing.
Okay. Can you share with us how you're viewing these medical costs over the next, you know, 5, 10, 20 years? You know, the cities and counties, we're just struggling with this and, you know, how we project out. And as you add additional staff, that burden gets larger. And so what is staff's thoughts on dealing with that issue years, several years out?
So we find those costs to be hard to predict because there are political battles that surround those costs and how they're structured. Our best offense or defense, if you will, is simply to the degree that we're able to project those costs, is to fund them as they accrue, as opposed to just doing pay-go. So for that reason, that's why we feel it's so significant that whereas 10 years ago, the accrued costs were zero funded. We're now, you know, within a year or, well, within 2 years, we should be at 90% funding of those accrued costs. And then we're effectively paying those accrued costs out of the bank because we funded them as they accrued, as people put in their years, as opposed to putting that burden on some future board and staff members.
So you see the revenues keeping, as you accrue those costs, you see the revenues keeping pace with that over the, how many years are you projecting it out on some of these medical costs and these accrued costs?
So the actuarial tables give expected, you know, lifespans for our retirees, and we just go by those tables. We have an, for 2019, we'll have an actuary come in, and very soon here, actually, and run those numbers again for us based on the latest actuarial tables. So we don't attempt to come up with those numbers ourselves. We ask our actuary to do it. But again, funding the costs as they accrue is so important to address exactly what you mentioned, which is instead of having future revenues fund costs that are accruing now, we're funding those costs as they accrue. So we don't have to concern ourselves really nearly as much about whether or not future revenues will keep increasing to cover increasing medical costs.
And will you share those actuarials with us? So
absolutely. Okay. Absolutely.
Director Groom.
Thank you. This is probably stating the obvious, but we're going to have to pay very close attention to what's going on in Sacramento. Some of the May revises I thought were very good. Some I thought were, you know, kind of from left field. And we just need to really, I think, be vigilant and have our folks talking to the governor's folks about things that we consider to be really important. There seems, my experience so far, shortly, from my seat on CSAC, and I think John will agree, is when we've asked for stuff, we've been given reasons why we can have it, but we've also been given reasons why we can't have something else. So there's a good dialogue that's presently going on, and I hope that we're part of that dialogue for our interests.
Director Sinks.
Thank you very much. I'd also like to appreciate Chair Groom and staff for helping answer my questions out of in a separate meeting and I've become very appreciative of how this budget has been constructed and redone. I had a couple questions. How many open positions do we currently have of the 405 authorized?
I believe it's approximately 30.
Okay.
40?
40. So about 10%.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Okay. What areas are we having challenges in employee retention and hiring?
I should
besides
probably.
IT.
I want to say, Director Sinks, it's across the board where we're seeing retirees.
Okay.
And we do see a little bit more in some divisions, like our tech divisions, or MMR for the longest time has been retiring a little bit more than most. You know, it's the workforce is changing too. I just mentioned that you don't have folks here coming here and staying as long as they used to.
Hmm.
Older workforces, we'll have folks that are retiring that have been here 35, 39 years, those kind of numbers. But then the folks that we are attracting and bringing in, it's not uncommon that they only stay here about 4 or 5 years.
And when they move on, the younger employees move on, what typically happens? Where do they go? They go to the private sector to do this work, or?
I don't know
they change
if we
careers
can point
and retool completely? I mean, we're pretty specialized in many ways, right?
A lot of our staff are going to other public agencies. I know that.
Yeah.
Too.
Now that we're okay. In the same building with a couple of other public agencies, we tend to see some shift between us and MTC, and we also poach some of their folks as well. So it's kind of a friendly, you know, poaching scenario. But that being said, you know, a lot of the
well, that's interesting.
Yeah, we don't have a lot of retention, recruiting, and retention problems. The issues come in with retirements, and like Jack said, these younger employees who tend to come in and then move to a different agency or a different organization.
So the employees we're losing, what fraction would you say are retirement in rough speak?
The majority are retirements.
Majority
we hired a lot
are,
of people in the 1990s.
Okay.
And those employees have stayed on quite a long time, and we're seeing a lot of those folks who came into those classes now starting to retire en masse.
Mm-hmm. Great. And then just one question on slide 22. If the expected return, if CalPERS board lowers the expected return by, say, 0.5%, what would this do to this picture?
We do expect CalPERS to lower that, and it will increase our total obligation, and it will increase our unfunded percentage.
Any idea roughly what those numbers would look like if it was 0.5% reduced?
Yeah, we have run that, so we've got... at the mid-year I'll come back with detail on that there, because there are so many variables. One really has to state what are the variables going into the assumptions.
Sure.
But with reasonable assumptions for the decrease, we'll probably see that 280 increase up to 350 or more.
Okay.
And and we'll, you know, and in terms of run rate, which is perhaps even more important, we'll expect to see our required annual contribution increase from roughly 10, probably up to 13 or 14
so
million per year.
If we're able to fulfill our OPEB obligations in the next 3 years conservatively, would we then have some cash flow to address this probable change in CalPERS return?
That is certainly one relatively comfortable way of dealing with that, as that $4 million extra contribution to OPEB rolls off.
Yeah,
it can. That $4 million can roll up into our required CalPERS contribution. So you're exactly right in terms of not impacting our. We can almost treat that $4 million. We've been doing it for so many years as a structural part of our budget, and just move it from one part of retirement over to another part of retirement without feeling the impact in the other parts of the budget. That's
so just in rough terms, if we kept the level at $1 million, just the change of 0.5% would change the amount of money we put into CalPERS mandatorily by how much, roughly?
0.5% would...
I realize that's a big step, but...
On the order of... $1.5 million a year, I think.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
So this, so just wrapping up our questions, and we'll go to the public and then close the public hearing. So Director Cutter.
Thank you. I did have a call. I don't know how many other people had a call, but talking about a certain frustration with permits and getting them, you know, okayed and so forth. And so I appreciate the fact that we are gearing up to do exactly that. And I'm wondering if perhaps we could do some kind of a customer service survey or something. And I realize you don't do that when everybody's mad at you, but actually you learn a lot when you do it when everybody's mad at you, because sometimes they're kind of, you know, mad for other reasons that you don't suspect. So I would just wonder if we have done that in the past. If not, if we could do kind of a general you know, check-in to find out how this works once we get this staff up and running. Is that solving our problems? And then, you know, going forward. So thank you.
Okay. Director Ross, you have a question?
Yes, thank you. Following up on Director Sink's questions about the about OPEB and pension, our pension debt, you know, every year I ask, say, hey, how much, if we spend a dollar, how much are we saving in the future? If we were all to go see a retirement planner, maybe we would get options. If you do this, you do that, this is the rate of return. I mean, maybe we could get that to some degree in the next year or so, or just if we put down a little bit more rate of return, you know, some options that maybe we could increase it a little bit, and what would be the value in increasing it, if that's possible. Thanks.
Absolutely, Director Ross. We are going to be sure to include that in the financial plan discussion mid-year. Yep.
Okay, so Marcy, do we have any comment from the public on this item?
No.
Okay, so with that, I'm going to close the public hearing. I'm going to ask my board members, any other comments? Or well, one more, Director Hudson, yes.
Not a comment so much as since we did this, this is... I'm reading exclusive purpose of considered testimony. No one showed up. I would move to continue the final public hearing to the regular schedule of Wednesday, June 5th to consider adoption of the proposed budget for fiscal year 2020.
Sounds great. All in favor? Aye. Don't know the
aye.
Action.
Aye.
Here we go. Thank you, Mr. McKay. So with that, we are going to adjourn this special meeting of the Board of Directors, and then can we reconvene right like that into our regular board meeting? 5 minutes. Okay, so we'll reconvene in 5 minutes for our regular board meeting.